Afghanistan could be a source of vast wealth.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Midday Update. There's a report this morning that Afghanistan might be sitting on top of $1 trillion of copper and lithium reserves.
And President Obama says tomorrow he'll deliver his first Oval Office speech. It'll be about BP and the Gulf of Mexico. All that and Little Orphan Annie Takes a Hike. But first,
joining us to talk about this morning's New York Times report on mineral reserves in Afghanistan, we turn to Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Good morning, Gregory.
Good morning.
You have reported from Afghanistan, Gregory. How new a development is this? Did somebody really just wake up and realize there's $1 trillion buried in the backyard?
Well, back in the 1980s, Soviet geologists were finding what they thought were mineral deposits in Afghanistan. What's new now, though, is that senior American officials are reporting that actually these deposits might be some of the largest in the world. Deposits of gold, iron, copper, and lithium, which is used in batteries for our BlackBerries and laptops.
You know, Afghanistan seems so chaotic now. How realistic would it be to start a major mining industry?
To get an industry off the ground from scratch could take a while. The other question, though, is can the government handle the process? I reached Ali Mauji on his cell phone in Kabul. He's the diplomatic director of the Aga Khan Development Network. They've done a lot of development projects in Afghanistan.
I think the critical thing is to ensure that the government has the right policy frameworks, regulatory mechanisms, and capacity to deal with private sector requests.
Gregory, one more question. When we start talking about Afghanistan as a lucrative place, you have to wonder how this could affect the American mission there and America's motivations to stay.
Well, Bill, one of the big criticisms of America that you do hear on the Kabul streets is that we're just there for the resources. So America has to be careful not to seem to be sticking around militarily just to compete for those private sector contracts. Also, China's involved here. They just won a copper mining rights in Afghanistan, and American officials say they bribed the Minister of Mines to get it. So finally, there is this problem of who does benefit from a mining industry. Will it be the Afghan people or individual power brokers inside and outside the government?
Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bart Melick is global commodity strategist at BMO Capital Markets. He's with us live from Toronto to talk about this big find and what it means. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Is it too soon for the markets to react to all this?
Oh, well, certainly is too soon. At this point, all we have is probably some sort of aerial surveys indicating that there is metal in some concentration around the country, but it is far, far away in terms of time from actual production.
What do you think needs to be done to get this to market?
First of all, you need some sort of exploration program to actually see what is underground. Mm-hmm. You need to explore it. You need to do engineering studies. There need to be a plan put in place to build the massive infrastructure required for mining programs, a logistical pipeline of everything from heavy equipment to sulfuric acid needs to be organized. So there are many, many, many steps that need to be taken before this can actually bring metal to the market.
Well, Bart Melick, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Listening to the Midday Update for Monday, June 14th. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. President Obama says tomorrow he'll deliver the first Oval Office speech. It'll be about the BP oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. BP's board of directors meets today to discuss a number of the White House's recent demands, including one that just came yesterday. The administration says it wants BP to deposit money into an escrow account to pay off the businesses who've lost out during the past month. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
What do we know about this escrow account?
Not a lot, except that as an escrow account, it'll be administered by an independent third party, and that should mean the White House and all the businesses affected on the Gulf Coast just could be sure of getting their hands on some cash if the courts rule against BP. But we don't know yet how much the White House has in mind for this account, and BP is not making any comment on it this morning.
And what about the other demands from the administration, Stephen? Didn't President Obama tell BP it couldn't pay out its dividend to shareholders?
That's right. And the company's really torn over this. I mean, executives are divided. On the one hand, they think that it could be an important political gesture to appease an angry American public. But on the other hand, says Jason Kenney of the ING Bank, the company is nervous about caving into the US and opening itself up to potentially unlimited claims.
The difficulty is that is there an element of feeding the beast? And if you yield to the US pressure, that essentially the US could come back and ask for more in the future.
Jason Kenney, incidentally, believes that the total ultimate cost of the disaster to BP will be between $6 and $7 billion, easily affordable by the company. Others are not so bullish, however. Credit Suisse puts the final bill at around $37 billion, and the Standard Bank has put it at $40 billion.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Now it's time for today's Marketplace Globalist Quiz. Our topic is coal, the biggest source of electricity in this country. Let's welcome our global quizmaster, Stefan Richter. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Bill. Are you ready for today's quiz?
I am. Hit me.
So my question for you today is this. Which country is the most dependent on coal? China, Poland, India, South Africa?
My mind goes to China and India, and I gotta think it's China.
They are, of course, the world's leading suspect on everything, but actually, no, in this case, they come in number two. 70% of the entire primary energy consumption in China is based on coal, so that's a lot.
So 70% for China, and there's one of those countries that's more dependent?
Yes, and it's either Poland or India or South Africa.
Well, I struck out with economic powerhouses. How about if I say South Africa?
Bingo.
Ah.
The World Cup of soccer is upon us, and South Africa is the host. Over three quarters, 77.7% of their entire energy consumption is coal-based.
So how does U.S. coal consumption compare to the rest of the world?
So the world average is just under 30%, and the United States is under 25%. So in a global context, we're doing pretty well, better than Germany, Japan, and other countries that are often considered to be much more environmentally clean. So not all the news on coal is bad, even though we still all need to clean up our job on that front because it still creates a lot of soot and mess.
Thank you for mining all those nuggets of information, Stefan.
Good to talk with you today.
France's president and Germany's chancellor are meeting today. They're talking about how European countries can get their budgets under control. But as the BBC's Johnny Diamond reports from Brussels for Marketplace, the two countries don't quite see eye to eye.
The Germans are not at all happy they're now being asked to bail out free-spending Greeks, Spaniards and Portuguese. They want new rules that would punish debt-laden countries. The French instead would like to move towards what they've always really wanted the single European currency to be, a single European economic government. And whilst the Germans are talking tough over cuts in public spending, the French are wary about cutting deficits too far, too fast. Even so, the French finance minister, Christine Lagarde, reckons the European public, battered by bad news, can be brought along.
If the politicians have the courage to say what the reality is, what the challenges are, what the risks are, then public opinion is very smart and people understand.
France and Germany are used to setting the agenda as the Eurozone's largest economies. But if they struggle to find common ground, it could stall a recovery for the US's biggest trading partner. In Brussels, I'm the BBC's Johnny Diamond, reporting for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Bill Radke. Congress has been working on new rules for the American financial system for months, and the end game is at hand. This week, senators and House members meet to work out their versions of financial reform bills. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports the interested parties are lobbying furiously.
banks are lobbying to protect their bottom lines. One reform would cap the fees banks can charge retailers for each swipe of a credit card. Another requires banks to spin off their derivatives trading. Plus, there's a ban on banks trading for themselves in the stock market. Banks say the profits lost will hurt lending. But former FDIC Chairman William Isaac, the author of a book on the financial crisis called Senseless Panic, doesn't think so.
It is going to hit the earnings of some of the very largest banks to some degree. I don't think it's pain they can't find a way to deal with.
Banks also face a tax to pay for the unwinding of failing institutions. David Nason with Promontory Financial asks, why hit up banks for something that may not be needed?
If it's truly supposed to be extraordinary relief, it seems odd that you would want to fund that in advance, because how could you predict what would be provided?
He says better to borrow the money to dismantle a sick bank and then require healthy banks to pay back the loan. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Over the weekend, an anniversary passed that you may not remember, an important one that could mark the first time we saw clues about the weakness of the financial system, one that Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us this morning to talk about. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So why is today such a big deal?
Because this is the first trading day of the fourth year of the worldwide financial meltdown.
Wait a second. I thought the financial meltdown was 1 or 2 years old.
Actually, it started, at least by my count, on June 12th of 2007, which is the day it became public that two Bear Stearns hedge funds speculating in mortgages were about to collapse.
So today begins year four. Why should we care about that?
Because there has been a lot of damage in 3 years that you have to take into account when you figure out what to do going forward. And people now are making the same kinds of mistakes that they made 3 years ago.
What kind of mistakes, Alan?
Investing in what has been doing well rather than in what's likely to do well. And what we're talking about now are bond funds, which has become America's favorite investment. And they're dumping stocks, and that's sure not what I'm doing.
What's the lesson here? What would you tell someone who wants to invest some money either in the stock market or in the bond market?
Well, I would tell them that, again, assuming you have a long enough time horizon, that I sure would rather own stocks that have high quality and dividends and earnings and things like that than own bonds, which are almost sure to decline in value because interest rates are surely going up.
So the safer bet then in this case would be stocks.
Right. It looks riskier, but I think it's much safer.
All right. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, June 14th at Marketplace.org. In the Bronx, New York today, there's an unusual ribbon cutting. Local politicians will gather to unveil an electric truck, the first of its kind in New York City. From WNYC in New York, Andrea Bernstein has the story.
Hunts Point in the Bronx is a peninsula home to lots of wholesalers. Ed Taylor owns Down East Seafood.
It's a food hub. We feed the city food here. There's the vegetable market here, the fish market, the meat market, and there's a lot of trucks.
16,000 a day. The asthma rate is also high, 7 times the national average. So when Congressman Jose Serrano called Taylor and said he could get a grant for a zero emissions truck, Taylor jumped.
We call her Big Green. We plug her in.
An electric truck costs over $200,000, about 4 times what a regular truck costs. Sounds expensive. But if gas runs what it did 2 summers ago, it pays for itself. Taylor says he has another motivation, independence from oil. In the wake of the BP oil spill, that has Congress's attention, too. Serrano says he'll push for funding for thousands of such trucks nationwide. In New York, I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
And finally, the 86-year-old comic strip Annie is disappearing from newspapers.
Tribune Media Services owns the license to The Little Orphan. The company says it's only pulling the print version of the strip.
Now, The Sun will come out tomorrow. Now, the sun will continue to come out, but it'll shine in, quote, new channels, possibly movies, games, graphic novels.
Oh, yes. Annie has outlasted thugs, poverty, orphanages. She can definitely survive transformational media realignments. Oh, it is. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. And this is the Midday Update at Marketplace.org.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.